How's everyone doing tonight?
Great.
All right. I've been going through the book of 1 Peter, so we will continue on going through the book of 1 Peter. As we mentioned before, the book of 1 Peter is about maintaining faith through trial. As he brings out in chapter 1 and verse 6, he says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in the praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." This is kind of his central theme, is that this faith that we have, and you know, faith is our beliefs. So we're going to be learning some things in the book of Peter, and if we believe them and accept them, then when we have those in us and we go through the trials and we maintain that faith is then proven because it didn't change because we went through the trial. And so then that proven faith is of super great value, because when Jesus Christ is revealed, then he's going to come and say, "Good job." And he's going to give us, as it says in verse 7 there, praise, glory, and honor, because we maintained our faith throughout. So Peter is kind of teaching us how to go through trials and to maintain a good faith. And, of course, jumping forward, I'm just kind of hitting some high points that are in chapter 1 here. He says, in verse 14, he says, "As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in your ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves in all your behavior. Because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy." So this is one of those things that, you know, this is what God has told us, is that we ought to be holy in our behavior, set apart in our behavior. Something holy is something special. It's something to be used for a very special purpose, like a golden bowl to hold the incense for the temple. It's valuable. It's special. You wouldn't use that bowl to eat cereal out of in the morning. It's something really special. So our behavior is likened to something holy. It should be set apart. It should be very good. It should be very precious. It should be holy behavior. And so we can immediately see then how, if we're going through trials and we have believed what God has said, that we ought to have holy behavior, now we're going through trials, if we maintain that faith throughout the trial, it's good job when Jesus is revealed, because we've done these things. And then jumping down on to verse 22, he says, "Since you have in obedience to the truth purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart." This is another thing. If we have obeyed the truth, he says, "Since you have in obedience to the truth purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren." That was the purpose of us obeying the truth, was for a sincere love of the brethren. And then a commandment here, fervently love one another from the heart. Fervently loving one another from the heart, if you attempt to obey that commandment, can result in some trials. And that's some of the things that we're going to get into in chapter 2 as we deal with some personal relationships. Those can result in trials. That can be trying to have holy behavior and love one another from the heart. In a husband and wife relationship, in an employer-employee relationship, in brother-sister relationships, and in relationships in a group such as we have right here. Then he likens us to stones, like Jesus was a stone, a good cornerstone. And we also are stones like Jesus, being built together into a temple of God to offer up spiritual sacrifices. That's in going forward to chapter 2 in verse 4 and on. And what's a spiritual sacrifice? Well, easy for me to pick. I had gone over Psalms 4 recently. Thanksgiving. Offering a thanksgiving to God would be like a spiritual sacrifice. So being thankful would be a spiritual sacrifice. So we are being built together into a group of people that can collectively have God's Spirit dwelling within us. In other words, we are thankful people. And we offer up spiritual sacrifices of thanksgiving to God. And as far as a building goes, it's great that we're all here. We're all stones in this building. And it's great we're all here. But at some point, rather than have a pile of stones, it's nice to assemble them in some sort of a meaningful structure. And so we're exhorted in other places to be built up, to be built together. We have to be united together into a common structure in order to create something meaningful for the Spirit of God to dwell in. So we should be being built together. We should be forming bonds together. Bonds of peace, bonds of love, bonds of the Spirit. So that we can be built up. You should be doing that with your wife, obviously, and kids. You should be doing that with your brothers and sisters around you. We should all be doing that. So, let's pick it up in chapter 2 and verse 11. Peter continues on. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, on account of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority, or to governors sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. Act as free men, and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bondslaves of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor if for the sake of conscience towards God a man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated you endure it with patience? But if, when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. For by his wounds you were healed. For you were continually straying like sheep, but now you have returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. And let not your adornment be external, braiding of the hair, wearing gold jewelry, or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. You husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. To sum up, let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for this very purpose, that you might inherit a blessing. For let him who means to love life and see good days refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. All right. Okay, he says he urges us as strangers and aliens. We're not of this world. We are going to heaven. We are here temporarily. We know we're all going to die. Soon we're going to be in heaven. So he urges us, as strangers and aliens, to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against our souls. He says, keep our behavior excellent among the Gentiles so they have no ability to slander us because we have good behavior. Then he gets into some specifics here in verse 13. He says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors as by him sent for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. So, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. Would our government As it stands right now, could that be contrived as being some sort of a human institution or creation that they thought up and put into practice? Probably could, couldn't it? It's interesting here that he gives us a mindset, how we ought to approach it. It's one of those mindsets, it's a gracious mindset. I was watching baby Zoe. She was running around up to the aisle here, both tonight and in the morning. And so I'll use this as an example. When baby Zoe says, ga, 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 da, da, or whatever, then what's going to be Mike and Kaji's response to Zoe? Is it going to be, you're not pronouncing your words quite correctly? Or is it going to be, oh, look, she's talking? It's going to be, oh, look, she's talking. They are in graciousness giving to baby Zoe that she is talking. This is kind of the manner of our mindset towards our government. He gives us what our mindset towards the government should be. It is, the king is one in authority and governors sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. So when you are interacting with the authority, you are giving them that they are sent by God and have authority to punish evildoers and praise those who do right, of which you are foremost of them doing right, being so submissive towards the authority, because you're being submissive towards God. And as you are submissive towards God and in graciousness give to your authority that they are sent by God and doing His will, even though you might be undergoing a trial currently with the authority. See how this works? He says in verse 15, "For such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men." What we're doing right here is we're being submissive. What we're doing right here is we're being humble. We're doing it towards God. We're expressing it towards the authority. At the end, in verse 16, I guess he says, "Act as free men and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bondslaves of God." It is all too easy to use your freedom as a covering for evil. To take up an unsubmissive attitude towards whatever human creation it is and be unsubmissive towards God. That is not our purpose. He says in verse 17, "Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king." If you fear God, you will honor your king. You will honor your authority. I also like in verse 17, there's a certain level of importance that we put on things, I guess. It says, all men are honored. We honor all men. We love the brotherhood. Just thought that was interesting. We fear God and we honor the king. Then he goes into, who here is a servant? A couple of you raise your hand. We're all servants, pretty much of our government. This transitions very nicely. I'm reminded of the Jews in Jesus' time who, they were not enslaved to the Romans. You know, in the same way, we might have a tendency to think we're not enslaved to our government. We're free people. Trust me. You're enslaved by whatever human creation they come up with. You're kind of... God's called us to be submissive. He says, "Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable." So we have been called to be submissive, to be kind, to be gracious, even to unreasonable masters. And this would cover, obviously, employee-employer relations, and all stuff like that. Verse 19, he continues, "For this finds favor, if for the sake of conscience towards God, a man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly." It's for the sake of our conscience towards God. Towards God, we are submissive. That's who we're doing it for. And then he goes on, "There's no credit for you if you do what's wrong and you suffer for it." So if you're unsubmissive and you're suffering, There's no benefit in that. But if you are being submissive and suffering, that's that proof of your faith, which is more precious than gold. Precious than pure gold. When Jesus is revealed, if you have been submissive under trial, it's going to be good job. You're going to get praise from God. You're going to get glory from God, and you're going to be honored because you've done that. He says, "We have been called for this purpose. Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example to follow in His steps. That example was that He committed no sin nor had any deceit in His mouth. When He was being reviled, He did not revile in return. When He was suffering, He uttered no threats, but He kept entrusting Himself to God, who was a righteous judge. And God was going to judge righteously. And He did judge righteously. He took Jesus and put Him first place in all creation. He gave Him honor. He gave Him praise. He gave him glory because He submitted Himself to the point of death. It says He bore our sins in His body to the cross so that we could live. And then it says, continuing on into chapter 3, it says, in the same way. So in the same way as Jesus did this, and in the same way, this is for you husbands, in the same way that you're submitting to your authorities, your wife is submitting to you. It's the same thing. It says, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. I love the way he puts that, just because of the way women are. They may be won without a word. You don't have to say anything. It's all about your spirit. He says, let not your adornment, and in your New American Standard, they add the word merely. So I left it out. And I love the way my Rotherhams reads. I feel like it reads a lot better right there, because it just says, and let not your adornment be external. As a gal, you want to be pretty. I see it in Tiffany. I mean, she already wants to be pretty and wear a pretty dress and all that stuff. That's not actually what makes you pretty. What makes you pretty is the spirit that's inside you. It's interesting that God uses even the physical kings of this earth to accomplish His will, and I'm reminded of Esther, you know, because here the king had a most beautiful wife, most beautiful woman in the whole kingdom. So he wanted to show her off. She's so pretty, right? So he called for her, and she wouldn't come. So they got rid of her, and they set out on a mission to find the most beautiful girl in the whole entire kingdom. Now, that girl was Esther. And the thing about Esther is that she obeyed her uncle Mordecai in everything. Like, he was her own dad. And he was not her dad, he was not her parent, but she obeyed him in everything. And it says she found favor in the eyes of all. And when she was taken into the palace and then going to be brought in before the king, it says she took nothing with her except what is it? It's not Haman. It's something the head eunuch recommended. So in other words, she was very submissive. She was very humble. She was very obedient. She was very beautiful. And she found favor in the king's eyes, and she found favor in everyone's eyes doing that. And she was, by God, witnessed to be the most beautiful woman in the entire kingdom. So, let not your adornment be external. What you wear, what you do with your hair, all that stuff. It's the hidden person of the heart, in verse 4, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Things are precious because they're very rare. You don't find very many gentle, quiet spirits. When you do, they're very rare, they're very precious, they're very beautiful. You probably can't even find anything as precious as that. It says in verse 5, it says, for in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. And then it brings out, in this passage, you know, it brings out the example of Sarah. Now, do we all know what happened to Sarah? Let's go back and read that real quick. We can go back and read that in Genesis 12. We'll read the example of Sarah quickly in Genesis 12 and starting in verse 10. Two places, actually. It says, there was a famine in the land, Genesis 12, chapter 12, verse 10. And Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came about, when he came near Egypt, that he said to Sarai his wife, see now, I know that you are a beautiful woman. And it will come to pass, when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you. And it came about when Abram came into Egypt that the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore he treated Abram well for her sake and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants and female donkeys and camels. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say, 'She is my sister,' so I took her as my wife? Now then, here is your wife, take her and go." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that belonged to him. So this is the first time it happened. This is what Abraham did to Sarah. Here they are going into a strange land, and he's married, and she's not, I mean, we'll find out from the next place, she is his sister. Daughter of his father, but not daughter of his mother, but she's his wife. And he's saying, "Oh, she's my sister," and not saying that she's his wife. Well, what would happen? I mean, the logical thing, you'd be afraid that someone would want to take you for their wife, and that's exactly what happened to her. But I want you to notice what's interesting is in verse 16, Abraham got treated really well for her sake. It says he got sheep, oxen, donkeys, male and female servants, donkeys, camels. He got treated really well because of her. And nothing happened to her. God watched over her. Let's flip forward again to Genesis chapter 20. We'll read about the second time this happened. Genesis chapter 20 and verse 1. Now Abraham journeyed from there towards the land of Negev, and settled between Kadesh and Shur, and then he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night, and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman you have taken, for she is married." Now Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, "Lord, wilt thou slay a nation, even though blameless? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister,' and she herself said, 'He is my brother'? In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands have I done this." Then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this, and I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, and all who are yours." So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were greatly frightened. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What have you encountered that you have done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is actually my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it came about, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, 'This is the kindness which you will show to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" And Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham, and restored his wife Sarah to him. And Abimelech said, "Behold, my land is before you. Settle wherever you please." And to Sarah he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is your vindication before all who are with you, and before all men you are cleared." And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids, so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Then the Lord took note of Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So this is what happened to Sarah. And it's interesting. He says, back in Peter, he says, in verse 6, "Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. You have become your children, if you do what is right, without being frightened by any fear." There's probably a lot of opportunity for Sarah to become frightened by some sort of a fear that something bad was going to happen to her if she did this and was submissive towards Abraham in this idea of pretending like she wasn't really his wife when she really was his wife. See, but she was submissive towards her husband. And it actually worked out that God himself watched over her And it worked out that Abraham kind of got kind of rich because he had such a submissive woman for a wife. We can go and we can read Proverbs 31 about how an excellent wife, who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Abraham had no lack of gain because of Sarah, his wife, because she was a submissive woman, called him Lord, following him, and putting her trust in God. And God says God took note of Sarah. Then in verse 7 he goes on, he says, "You husbands likewise." So likewise, in the same way as you're submissive to your government, likewise that you're the same way and you're submissive to a master, likewise the same way that Jesus was submissive as he went to the cross, likewise the same way that your wife ought to be submissive to you, likewise you ought to live with your wife in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel. So now you see that we need to be submissive towards God in our interactions with our wives. Our wife is a different person or a different type of a vessel than us as a man. And it says to live with your wife in an understanding way. We need to understand our wife. That means we need to understand where she's at. It means we need to understand how she's feeling, how life is working for her, how the things that we are doing are affecting her, how she feels about stuff. If we don't understand our wife or know where she's at or know what's going on to her, with her, we have no way. We couldn't, if you don't even understand your wife, you couldn't even do something nice for her. You might think you're going to do something nice for her, and you might buy her a broom. She's already got a broom, and she doesn't want a broom. And you might be thinking this is great because she needs a broom. And that might hurt her. I use that example because that's what my dad actually bought my mom a mop for Christmas at one time when they were first married and she started crying. It's just funny. We've been called by God to understand our wife. We need to understand our wife. We need to understand where she's at. There's no way we can be submissive towards God if we don't understand our wife. It's something we need to do as a man. It's very easy as a man to go do your thing and expect your wife to be following you and expect her wife to be doing what's good. But if you don't understand where she's at, she's weaker than you. She's different than you. You might be able to do that type of stuff and everybody just copes with it and deals with it, but you need to understand where your wife is at. You need to understand how the decisions you make in your home affect her in her day-to-day life. You might decide that the best thing you're going to do is get up at 6:30 and you're going to have a family devotion, and you don't understand that she's got 3 kids and it's hard for her to get those kids up. You know? Here's a good one for me. My wife was pregnant and my bathroom was torn apart and not remodeled. And it was pretty bad. Like, when Ricky was pregnant with Tiffany, I mean, here she is pregnant, having to go downstairs and use the bathroom all the time. I mean, that was pretty bad. And then finally, it clicked. Like, the way I'm doing this is making this a difficult environment for her. But I'm not the one who's pregnant. I'm not the one who's dealing with all that. So it's out of sight, out of mind. It's easy for me to not have to worry about it when I don't have to deal with it every day. So I can make a decision that to me seems like we're being frugal or something like that, and it impact her in a difficult, negative way. We need to understand our wives. He says, "Grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers may not be hindered." Further on down, when he's quoting from the Old Testament, he says, "For the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." And then in verse 8, he also says, "To sum up, let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit." I just want to clump that in with understanding our wife and loving our wife. We need to be harmonious with our wife, sympathetic, brotherly. You know, in Song of Solomon, it talks about your sister wife. He's always calling her his sister wife. There's an aspect where we as men treat our wives like our sister, whom we love, not our peon that we're in authority over. This is my sister, whom I love. My sister wife. It says, be sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Let's do that towards our wives. Let's understand them. Let's understand where they're at. Let's lead them in a good way. And then, verse 8 is actually for us, towards us all. Being harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit towards one another is what we ought to be being. Remember, we honor all men. We love the brotherhood. These are the things that make for love. He says, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for this very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. We were called for the very purpose that when an insult's cast at us, we return a blessing. When we believe that, and that becomes our belief and our understanding, we know that this is who God is, then when we do that, it's a trial when someone's casting insults at us. But if we maintain this faith and return the blessing instead, we will inherit a blessing in the form of praise and honor from God at the revealing of Jesus Christ. He says, let him who means to love life and see good days refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Peace is something to be sought after and pursued. May involve you having to go through a trial. Sacrifice yourself a little bit to make that happen. It says, the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous. His ears attend to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Don't expect that if you are not harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, do not expect God to be listening to you or answering your prayers or even care what you're asking. If Tiffany's throwing a fit, I am not giving her chocolate. But if I see somebody else mistreating her, if I see her playing nicely and some other kid run up and take her toy, and she says, whoa, and so then she goes and plays with something else, and the kid comes and takes that, and so she just gives it to him and goes and plays something else. And then it happens again, and she goes and does it again. At some point, I'm going to put a stop to Mr. Taker, and I'm probably going to be giving Tiffany chocolate. Do you see how that works? If we as children of God are being mistreated, but by faith, His Spirit is indwelling us, and we are returning the blessing instead, then He's hearing us, and He's listening to us. He looks on us, and that looks really good to Him. That's what He's looking for. We are following Him. We have His Spirit in us. And then we have the request that we ask, because we're asking them by His Spirit. If from a spirit of love and kindness and humility you ask for something, you're probably going to get it. If from a spirit of pride and contention you're greedy and you want and are asking, you are probably not going to get it. So we need to have God's Spirit dwelling within us. We need to have faith. We need to accept the things that He's saying. We need to make them a part of our lives. And we need to faithfully do them. And we will inherit a blessing.